What is the impression that comes to your mind when I say that something is made in China? Are you thinking low quality, knockoffs, counterfeits, or unoriginal? These are the words that usually come to mind when we think about things made in China. As China has risen to become the largest export economy in the world, exporting over $2 trillion worth of goods in 2017 alone, it has become no exaggeration to say that in almost every region of the world, everyone must have owned or at least encountered something manufactured in China. In today's episode, we're going to consider these goods and cultural productions made in China and question the stereotype of unoriginal counterfeit goods. The question is really that, are these copies always bad, always low quality? And in fact, if they are low quality, does that mean that they don't have value, especially aesthetic value, to them at all? What if they're as good as the original? Or maybe their original ideas in making these copies? These are what we're going to examine, and especially so through the style of China Tuku. To do so, we'll first look at what's China's fascination with copying, and then examine architecture and interior design choices to understand the phenomena of tacky, repurposed aesthetic taste that I call China Tuku. Now, what is China Tuku? Tuku is the phonetic English translation of a subcultural style, Tuku, which in Chinese means tacky cool. The emphasis really should be on the English term tu and not the Chinese tu, as in tacky. So how you can think about it is to understand it in its double meaning of both outdated and cool, cooler, coolest, Tuku. This style is marked by an attitude of poking ironic fun at, but also embracing the stylistic elements of dated popular taste. To get a visual image of Tuku, think of the Microsoft Rainbow Word Art on a full background of digitally rendered nature, printed on a glossy, plastic-laminated, cheap notebook. For visual references, I suggest going to the Instagram page of @butterfly.minmin, that's butterfly.minmin. She is a 3D graphic artist based in Taiwan, and in my opinion, the living embodiment of the saturated visual overkill of Tuku. Once you've made a visual note of what we'll be talking about, let's jump straight into the topic. There is a long-standing tradition of imitation art within China that boasts of its own classification system. The highest form of simulacrum bears the essence of the original. In Chinese, this is called the qi, and in English, it translates to the life force or the spirit of the original, to the extent that the image evokes and becomes a real substitute of the original. In this case, art imitates and reproduces life, capturing not a perfect copy of the appearance, but its essence. We see this a lot in traditional Chinese ink painting, where if you look at the mountains and the lakes, they do not look extremely realistic, but they do exude the spirit of the sublime beauty of nature. And the important thing is that it captures the spirit of this nature and living things, and not so much that it looks extremely similar to the real thing. Also, the act of perfectly copying is highly regarded by the Chinese as testament to cultural and technological achievements. There are two terms that we can consider here. One is 仿制品, and the other is 复制品. 仿制品 is closer to what we will call a reproduction, a knockoff, if you will, that you can buy in a museum store. Whereas a 复制品 is a very high-quality copy, something that is worthy of studying or putting in a museum. These instances of copying are for the sake of understanding the beauty of form and structure, and the technology and craftsmanship, as well as artistic achievements. For the Chinese, to perfectly reproduce something shows thorough understanding and extraordinary craftsmanship. Where the value is perceived is not so much in having an original idea, but more that you show the skill and understanding of the structure of something. In the book Original Copies, Architectural Mimicry in Contemporary China, author Bianca Bosca examined the intriguing phenomena of simulacroscapes. These simulacroscapes are themed residential communities in China that replicate archaic European and American towns. For instance, you will find in China residences called Little Paris or Little Venice towns, and how they will look like will really be a miniature version of Paris with an Eiffel Tower in the middle of the park, or a miniature version of Venice complete with the canal and the boats running through. Well, you can imagine that from the point of view of both Western and Chinese intellectual elite, they think of this as backward and kitschy, fake, or unimaginative and cliché. But Bianca Bosca wants us to have a more nuanced reading of the phenomenon, explaining the conditions for their existence and viewing them as monuments to the new China. These mass-scale residential simulacroscapes are aimed at the expanding middle class of the new China. And they're successful because of their visibility as coveted status symbols. Excuse me. It's very much like wearing a lot of huge Gucci logos on your belt or on your shoes, or the LV monograms that's really popular with both young people wearing streetwear and older people alike. The interesting thing is that while a lot of people see this as West worship, because these Chinese people think that Paris or Venice or Amsterdam is amazing, but we have to look beyond that. It's not so much about West worship, but actually it's a mindset of Chinese superiority. Because the idea is that all the good things of the world, all these elements of Western cultural good taste, can be found in China and tailored to Chinese taste. Now Chinese people don't have to travel overseas to look at these things. They can find it right at their doorsteps, quite literally. Now let us examine the interior design choices made by homebuyers. Because by looking at the domestic space, we get a glimpse into the popular taste and preferences of individuals. It's also interesting to think about the domestic space because it's a semi-permanent space where once you decide on the interior design or the overall style of your house and you buy your furniture and you paint your walls, it is quite unlikely that you will change it. So for someone to choose a certain wallpaper for their house or to buy certain furniture, they must be quite sure of their taste because they're going to see these things every day of their lives. And the best way to do research on popular taste would be to consult the internet. So what I did was to look for the Chinese equivalent of Reddit or Quora, which is this website called Zhihu. And I searched for popular interior design choices, popular interior design, new homes, things like that. And the interesting thing is that what European style means in China is quite literally chandeliers, Greek columns, Rococo motifs. You can imagine a lot of seashells and lots of lace. There are these lace coverings for your washing machine and your TV. I've seen that in my relative's house. They're used to keep the dust off and also, you know, to look pretty. And also a lot of Baroque furnishing. We can understand this from the words of Italian philosopher Umberto Eco, who explained that such eclectic frenzy and compulsive imitation prevail where wealth has no history. And this goes back to the point of the new China, where since the economic reform and the open door policy, well, a lot of people suddenly got rich. But because of the Cultural Revolution, there was that break in the rich cultural and historical tradition. So now people who has a lot of wealth, but there is a break in history. They don't really know where to spend their money or how to develop their taste. Therefore, the easiest thing to do is to copy, and to copy in terms of the form and not so much the substance. This aesthetic had also seen an earlier manifestation in America. In the seemingly artificial regions of post-urban California and Florida, and it is happening now for the Chinese nouveau riche. because, as I said, of the disruption in historical, cultural, and aesthetic richness as a result of the Cultural Revolution. The Rococo motifs and grid columns that were once elements of high culture and luxury are today considered archaic and kitschy because of their irrelevance and impracticality to contemporary urban living. This is especially so after the new standard of design elevating functionality over appearance set by the Bauhaus school and modernist architecture. If you go onto Pinterest today, most of the popular recommended styles of interior furnishing, or even if you go to IKEA, things that you'll see, buzzwords are mid-century modern, and most things feature this pared-down, very sleek, Scandinavian look. Those are the things that are popular right now. So all these Rococo chandeliers and grid columns are really just too much for the likes and taste of people right now. Well, a more interesting development of this interior appropriation is how this quote-unquote European style copies evolve into mutations with Chinese characteristics. What is kept of the European style, in other words, the elaborately ornamental Rococo and Baroque, is the essence of sensory overload, but the manifestations are more in keeping with current trends. So what are these current trends? Let me describe some of them for you. One image from zhihu.com, which is the Chinese Reddit, shows the design on a sliding closet door. It features bright, saturated colors of blue skies and soaring birds, and a high-definition landscape rendering of detailed grass, gradient-infused lotus plants in the foreground, overall a flat pictorial space, and an unmistakable uplifting mood. It's supposed to make you feel really like, look, this is nature, but it's digital nature. Yeah, it's all too much and too artificial and too uplifting, too bright and too cool. This was a photo in a series uploaded by a millennial netizen expressing her disbelief at her parents' interior design choices for their new house on the outskirts of the main city. And she is not alone in her lamentations, because we see a lot of other people online liking her post and basically just saying that, yeah, this happened to me too. My parents also like designs like this. They love this outlandish styles for their new wedding homes. So some other examples would be a bed frame with a Microsoft logo that also acts as a lamp. I don't really know what is the fascination with Microsoft here. There is also a lamp that has a virus molecule-like structure. It's a lighting fixture that turns blue or pink. It looks like a karaoke parlor. And there's also a bedroom with crowded magenta rose wallpaper, as well as magenta bed sheets and a big digitally rendered flowers with aurora all around it. And then, well, my favorite, there is a kitchen floor that is fully covered with a stock image of retreating seawater and sandy beach. Can you imagine making food in this kitchen? You're going to feel so relaxed because you can feel your feet in the sand. I wonder about that. Honestly, all these images are so fascinating. They're kind of cringy, but they also really just draw your attention. It's quite hard to look away from them. And this act of personalizing the living room wallpaper or lighting fixture are really popular with older people from small cities in China. That, combined with their love for nature and saturated colors, result in this home of a digital pretense of nature. In order to understand mom and dad's unwavering belief in the aesthetic choice of these interiors, we have to put things into context and perspective. Whatever is fashionable, trendy, or cool has always to be differentiated from the mainstream. So we have to ask, in comparison to what are these design choices cool and trendy? If we think about the older, simple countryside homes with wooden furniture and undecorated walls before the rapid urbanization and digitization of China, then all the examples I have presented exhibit an extraordinary sense and creativity in being different. They are most likely not going to be defined as refined or classic, but in terms of coolness, in terms of being different and novel, these interior designs might stand a chance, even if it's only within the circle of mom and dad or small town folk. As I said, these designs are really popular with the older generation of Chinese people, as well as people who are living in the lower tiered cities in China. Globalization and localization aren't just buzzwords for the marketing director. They can be felt when you enter the doors of these Chinese to cool interiors. From replicating Western architectural clusters to recapturing the essence of newfound wealth and self-expression, Chinese designs take on a life of its own. To only see the designs as tacky knockoffs would be a missed opportunity to embark on a nuanced cultural reading of Chinese thinking. This episode is an excerpt based on my essay, China Too Cool, Vernacular Innovations and Aesthetic Discontinuity of China. In my essay, I propose Too Cool as a lens of understanding the generational and economic differences in modern China set forth by the country's rapid urbanization. I talk about cultural productions made during the Cultural Revolution and right after during the economic reform of open door policy, cultural appropriations of Bollywood and poor copies of Japanese anime, as well as bizarre Taobao aesthetics. The overarching theme and mood is a relatable one of displacement and using creativity to regenerate meaning and identity. If this interests you, you can get a free PDF version of my essay from my website. It's not-seriously.format.com/China Too Cool. It will be in the show notes. In the next episode, I'll be speaking with fashion curator Daniela Monasterios on DIY fashion and face filters. We'll discuss how identity is performed through personalizing clothes and how AR technology will affect the future of identity making. I am Yijing Fly. Thank you for listening to Framing Visual Culture. Till next time!